Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF, and in Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be real.
I'm John Batchelor. Michael Yon, Patreon.com is where you can find Michael's reports. Patreon.com. And you're welcome to be a subscriber. Michael has been in Panama for weeks and weeks and weeks, reporting on the story of migrants coming through the Darien Gap and their way north through Costa Rica, through all of the Central American states until they reach Mexico. Then the plan is to traverse Mexico, reach the Mexican-American border, and cross in. That is the plan. And the people are coming from what Michael has described, extracontinental, from Asia, from Africa, far afield. Michael, he's even mentioned Russians, though he didn't meet the Russians. So we're just telling stories here. Michael, the congressman, Tom Tiffany, is back in America now, and I believe he's been on television talking about his experience. What did he learn? What did he report to the United States audience and to his constituents?
He has learned a lot. Tom Tiffany, full credit to Tom. I didn't know him before, but he his chief of staff have been reading my work, my war work since Iraq and Afghanistan and all the wars, Hong Kong and all that. And so when they saw that I was down here, I've been down here almost 3.5 months now between here and Colombia. Tom asked to come down. I said, sure. But you know, there won't be any security. The security will be basically, me and, Chuck Colton and Masako Ganaha and a bunch of Imbara Indians. That's it. And so you're not going to come down here with any kind of any other support whatsoever. The main support will actually be Indians. And so he said, let's go. So I started to set it up. It took about a month to get it set up, and we did it. And he went out to Bajo Chiquito, and I think he was quite stunned. I saw him on Fox. I saw him on quite a lot of programs already, and they're kind of tumbling in. Everybody wants to hear what he saw there. I'm so happy that he went. First of all, he showed true leadership. He put himself at risk, and I'd like to say it wasn't without risk, but it was riskless, but it wasn't. It was actually, and we could have gotten a flash flood.
Michael, you're on a river where people drown every day. That's where you were.
And there was a boat.
You were in a dugout canoe. You were not in some Boston whaler.
That's right. One of the canoes flipped that we passed. You saw that video that I sent you, right?
Sure.
The first dugout canoe in that flotilla actually flipped after it passed us and dumped everybody, and almost three of them almost drowned, but the Indians saved them.
The only reason I watched those videos, Michael, is because I know you wouldn't have sent it to me if you'd gone in the river. It would have been too wet. The camera would have been wrecked. So I have a clue that this is going to come out to a happy ending. However, Tom learned what Congressman, this is Seven, Wisconsin. He's a dairy farmer and a dairy farmer's kid, so he's a tough guy. What he learned is what we've been reporting for weeks, what is it, months now, Michael? That the migrant flow is constant coming from Colombia. It has not been interrupted in any fashion. You've also spent time with a physician who was down there giving aid to people. What did you learn from him about the people that who are arriving?
He spent a month out there, and, he can't talk too much, but he can talk in generalities. He really felt for the people, and it was clear that he didn't like being out there himself because it was pretty rough. And he, he treated more than 2,000 people in that month. And, you know, there were other people treating others. So, you know, it's just a constant night and day, 24/7. And a lot of deaths hearing, you know, he told me about the story I told you before about the man who was lost for 22 days.
Right.
That just ended last week, or that guy's still out there somewhere. I mean, he's continued forward. And there's just many, many stories like that. It's enough to fill up hour after hour. So every person that comes in has stories like that. Stories like, oh, I saw somebody fall off the cliff. I saw somebody get bitten by a snake. I saw several people raped or dead. One guy said he saw 16 bodies on the trail. This was last week. So, I mean, this is just like everybody that comes in has a story like this. It's really, really rough. My best guess, based on so many interviews now, is that probably about 10% of the people that come through are dying. I know that sounds outlandishly high, and it's actually hard to for me to support that because we don't actually know how many are coming in, and we don't actually know how many are coming out.
Right.
We've got a good estimate of how many are coming out, and after you talked with enough people, you know, how big was your group and how many lived, how many survived, it's looking like probably about 10% is definitely directionally accurate. It's not 1%. I'll put it that way. It's way more than 5%. So I would say probably 10. I've heard people estimate 15, but I'll just say I'll hold it 10, which is a pretty high number.
Michael, your trip by aircraft over the Darien Gap, could you see people? Could you see pathways, paths in through the jungle, or was it just that solid canopy that I saw in the photograph?
A lot of it was solid canopy. You know, we could see some waterfalls occasionally and obviously a lot of rivers. But when we would fly low, for instance, there was bad weather and so we had to get low, and plus we buzzed Baja Chiquito a couple times. When we got low and after we kind of got to the edge near Baja Chiquito, then we could see a few paths out there. And then finally, a little bit further past Baja Chiquito, now you're starting to get into actual farms. Now you're starting to see cows and, you know, and that sort of thing. And actually, we were when the weather was kind of bad, we really did dip pretty low, so we could see quite a few people, but not out in the triple canopy. We couldn't see them there. I'm talking about when we got over farmland, when we really left the gap.
All right. Now, there's one other mystery that you've been pursuing for several weeks. That's the Cubans whom you met in Baja Chiquito, who seemed in really good shape for having come through that gap. And you think you have a clue as to why they were so happy and so well organized. What did you learn, Michael?
There's still some mystery to this, but what we do know is that they're coming through some route and with better guides than others. We know that the Kuna Indians, there's three main types of Indians out there, the Kuna, Imbara, and Wunan. And we know that the Imbara and Wunan are helping a lot, as are the Kuna. And so it depends on which route they go and which guides they get. That's clear. Some people, if they got enough money, can take more boat rides at different places. But I haven't answered this question yet to my own satisfaction, so we're still digging on it. That's one of the reasons we flew down there today, actually. I wanted to stay. You know, I would stay down there several days, but Centerfront's not going to let us camp out there.
You think that they take the boat to a closer landing place than walking through from Colombia? That would make sense. The coast of Colombia abuts Panama. In other words, there's part of this. All I have is a map, Michael, so correct me. There's part of this where they could land along the shoreline and then walk, I guess, west to you or southwest to you. Does that make sense, Michael? It means that they're not traversing the depths of the jungle.
We know, for instance, that they were landing there. That's a fact. Centerfront confirms that. Reports you can see in the media confirm that. And the villagers confirm that. But they say that they're not landing there now. And so the people that they're guiding now are actually walking over from Capargana and Turbo. They're actually coming in from Colombia. And that's not far away from the village we were at today, Puerto Obaldia. It's not very far. I mean, it's going to take at least a couple, let me be careful what I say about this, but a couple of days or so, 2 or 3 days to get over from the Colombia side to that village. But it's also clear that Centerfront is now trying to keep the migrants from coming to that village. In other words, they're keeping the migrants out in the jungle. It's actually harder now for the migrants than before, because they're trying to separate the villagers from the migrants so that the migrants aren't getting any help whatsoever.
But that's income for the Umbara, right? I mean, Umbara Indian had been earning good money. You estimated it was $65. I think that was the estimate you gave me to take those boat rides and come on to the Panama Highway. So are the Umbara going along with having their revenue cut off?
Actually, there's three different the people that we were interviewing today were actually not Indians, but there are the Indian reservation surrounds that village. So the Kuna Indians are a little bit a few kilometers away. He said we didn't go to their village. And then the Imbara and Wunan are more on the direction to Bajo Chiquito. And so they certainly are being impacted. First of all, the COVID itself caused a lot of impact. Even in these remote villages, it caused significant impact. You might think that they're not affected, but they are. And so that caused, and he talked about that too, the coyote we interviewed. He said it put a lot of stress on the village. You know, they were, he clearly and the other villagers feel sorry for the migrants. They're dying out there, and they're humans too. They don't like to see the people dying out there. At the same time, it is a revenue source. So, what comes next? This is going to be quite significant because the numbers are exploding, and it's clear that Centerfront does not have control over this. And of course, they're just flooding up, you know, to a neighborhood near you in the United States.
If they cut off access to the indigenous people's villages, that will mean more casualties, not fewer casualties. Isn't that logical? They're left out there in the jungle.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. No question about it. No question about it. If they're cut off, there's still the bandits out there. They're still, you know, raping and murdering, you know, the ones who come in. And that's one of the things that the coyote today was saying. He's like, if you don't, you know, this, you know, basically cutting us off from them is and also the COVID stress, the pandemic stress,
right,
has caused so much economic stress that every villager out there has tried to become like a tour guide, a smuggler to try to help people get through the jungle so they can make some of their own money, right? So they can make money. So, the coyote today said, you know, the pandemic has actually put a lot of stress on the migrants who have come through because there's people, it either don't get guides or they get a lot of guides that really don't know what they're doing. And they take them the wrong ways. They take them on rivers that are a lot rougher or, you know, areas with cliffs and that sort of thing. So it's you take a wrong path out there. And for instance, remember the man I told you about before who was gone for 22 days. He got lost on the 10th day. He was then he fell down some sort of cliff slippery area and he couldn't get out for 5 days. So that puts him at 15 days. He didn't have any food. Finally, some Haitians rescued him on the 15th or 16th day. And then it took him 7 more days to get out. So he was out there for 22 days because he took a wrong turn somewhere. This is no joke. There's people out there. There's got to be bones all over that jungle.
Michael Yon, Patreon.com, flying over the Darien Gap. I'm John Batchelor.
Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF and Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.